Hello and welcome to the 42nd episode of Woman, Conversations for the Curious, a podcast I created for women looking to squeeze more juice out of life. I'm Amy Crawford, founder of The Holistic Ingredient. I'm a mindset therapist, whole food lover, and more than a little bit passionate about helping you feel comfortable around what it is to be a woman. Today, I'm welcoming Bonnie Bliss back to the podcast. As many of you know, Bonnie was a guest in the first series when I spoke to her during episode 2 about the importance of self-pleasure during challenging times. Bonnie is a somatic sexologist, pleasure expert, and women's embodiment teacher based in Australia. She's taught thousands of people all over the world in adult sex education, embodiment, sexual wellness, and pleasure. Today, I've invited Bonnie back to the podcast to discuss sleep divorce. That is, couples who have decided to sleep apart and whether this spells relationship divorce. This is a really juicy conversation touching on stigma, judgment, the power of communication, how to foster greater intimacy during said sleep divorce, and we even share our own personal experiences. I hope these words land where they need and encourage healthy conversations with those you love. As always, if you're enjoying this series and you've 2 minutes to leave a review on your favourite podcast app, I'd really appreciate it. Now, just a quick note about the quality of the recording. Probably about 10 minutes before the end, our internet connection is interrupted for a few seconds here and there. So I do apologise, but hang tight as the recording continues. To sleep together or not to sleep together? That is the question, Bonnie Bliss.
Pretty interesting question.
It is an interesting question. Now, probably about 2 weeks ago, I was sitting in bed pondering different conversations to have on this podcast, and I asked my audience if they had any suggestions, and one person came back and said, "Oh yeah, I want you to talk about relationship, people who sleep together or don't." And I said, "Oh yes, this is really interesting." And so many came back saying they wanted to hear this discussion. So I'm delighted that you're here to have it with me, because it's complex, isn't it?
Mm-hmm,
there's definitely a lot. We've already had a little chat prior to this recording, and there's just so many different tangents. But I think where I'd like to start is with the stigma associated with sleeping apart. Do you think, Bonnie, that more people sleep apart than they'd care to admit?
I do think so. And I think, like a lot of things with intimate relating, it's hard to get the actual data on it because a lot of these things aren't studied that much, and people don't always talk about them with their friends. As a sex and intimacy coach, I have conversations with people that a lot of them have never had with anyone else in their lives. And so I hear things about what's going on for people that can be really fascinating and really insightful. But I'm also aware that these aren't normal conversations, you know, and it's not something that you'd necessarily talk to on Friday night drinks about, you know, the ins and outs of your intimate relating and your sleeping situation and all of that.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Because I do.
Yeah.
I don't know. I find it very refreshing to have these sorts of conversations. So I think probably, I dare say some people would hear some of the things that come out of my mouth and go, "Oh gosh, really?" But I feel like having these conversations just normalizes certainly opens up the idea of considering different alternatives to whatever's working for us as couples. And it's really healthy to have these discussions, which is, you know, ultimately why I wanted to have it today. But I feel I was reading an article this morning about the stigma, and I hear that couples who it became quite chic to sleep apart between the 1860s and the 1970s. It was kind of chic and middle class. The couples who had single beds were privileged, of course, but it was considered pretty cool. And then what happened, though, through the sexual revolution in the 1960s is it all started shifting, and this stigma, I hear, came about. That it suggested the end of marriage and frigidity, I think, or prudishness or something. So that was sort of the end of the, for a lot of people, of the single beds, and they came back together. And I think the stigma for a lot of people is that suggestion that it's the end. And another example is, I can't remember who it was, but someone with a reasonable celebrity status in the US shared a post to say that she had chosen to sleep apart. And I could not believe the commentary, the sheer number of people going, oh, marriage, ha ha, as if you're even in a marriage. How can you possibly be in love? What are you thinking? This is crazy. This is the end. Yeah, good luck, ha ha. Just amazing to hear, to feel that sense of the energy or the stigma around it.
Right. It's like this idea that if you're not sleeping together, then you're just together because of the kids, or you're together for financial reasons, or you're together for the, you know, you're just kind of friends, but you don't actually have a deeper connection, or there's no intimacy, or there's no closeness emotionally.
Yeah, that's correct. So, we have to remember that the studies show, what's really important is that we remember that the studies show that sleeping apart brings about better sleep. And yet, I dare say, there are lots of couples who may not sleep well at all together, but continue to sleep together in light of, I don't know, fear around having the conversation. Do you think that would be a legitimate fear for a lot of people?
Totally. I've spoken to people who've said, look, I sleep really badly. Maybe my partner snores, or they wiggle around a lot, or, you know, there's just some issue. One of them has insomnia or anxiety, or they're, you know, just really, really struggle with bad sleep, or they have health stuff going on. And they're like, God, I would just love to have my own space. And it is a tricky conversation. I think what I notice with my work with intimacy coaching is a lot of people are hesitant to talk about this stuff in their relationships. There's this idea that if you're talking about anything related to your sex life, your intimate life, your relationship generally, that it means that something's wrong, there's a problem, it's this big deal, you know, whereas what I'm really interested in is how do we have ongoing conversations about these things? You know, how do we say, like, oh, you know what? Like, actually, last week I noticed that this happened for me, and what I might need is that. And even though it's a little different to what I needed last month, like, could we try that? Would you be open to that? What do you need at the moment? You know, realizing that our needs and desires can change over time, and to be open to having an ongoing conversation about all of these aspects of relating, so that we don't find ourselves in situations where something's built up over a long period, or we are kind of repressing our needs or denying something that we realize that we want.
And sometimes, as you know, the more you push aside these little itches, these conversations that you want to have, the bigger the deal they become in your mind, and we start creating stories and all sorts of things. But I guess sometimes as well, when you name something you're worrying about, there can be a fear that something's going to unravel as a result, as you say. But really, using words to communicate how we're feeling about these sorts of things can be the beginning of something wonderful, can't they? An opportunity.
Totally. Yeah. Have you heard of this concept? People call it the relationship check-in.
Yes. Is that a little bit similar to a relationship agreement?
I don't know.
Like
actually.
A monthly check-in? Yes.
Right.
Yeah. I did
and
a podcast
I guess
on
it. Differently. Right. Okay, nice. Yeah. So my partner and I just started doing it, actually. It was really nice. And I found just different lists of questions, and we kind of put some together. And it was really good to just to say, like, what's working for you at the moment? What's not working for you at the moment? Like, how are you feeling with our intimate life? Is there anything that, how could I be a better partner to you? I think that was one of the questions. And is there anything that you're needing or desiring that I can support you with? You know, like, what's going on in your life? Is there something else you want to share with me that feels relevant that just hasn't come up in conversation yet? You know, and just having that space to just, like, put some things on the table. Even though I feel like in my relationship, we talk a lot. My partner's a psychotherapist. I do coaching work with intimacy. Like, we have a lot of conversations about this stuff, but it felt really helpful to just have a specific conversation about, like, where are you at? What's feeling good? What's not feeling good? You know? And I feel like that can feed into like having conversations that we've been avoiding.
And one of the things I love about the idea of the relationship agreement, or list, or whatever you'd like to call it, is so for listeners who don't know anything about this, there is a podcast I shared about this in the first series. And the idea, as Bonnie said, is that you agree on sort of a list of different questions. And it could be, if you're a married couple, as an example, it could be a section on, you know, our finances, how are you feeling about the finances, and how's work going for you, and what about the kids, and what about even our domestic chores, how are you feeling about what we're doing in the house together, and are you feeling like we're both pulling our weight, that sort of stuff. And the idea, one of the ideas for it, is that what it can do is limit that feeling of kind of nitpicking that you might have if one person's getting really irritated and they're like, God, I just wish you'd just hang your bath towel up. And, you know, what you can do is actually hold off on saying some of these things for your agreement, your date night or whatever it is, so that you can just have this discussion together and just limit that nitpicking that might happen during the week. I thought that was sort of quite interesting.
Yeah.
And so can I ask, you do yours once a month?
Well, we just started, but I think we just started it once a month, because that's really the benefit, right? It's not just doing it once, but trying to do it semi-regularly, like once a month makes sense, or every few weeks, or if it feels like there's a lot going on, I think it might be helpful to do it more often. And I can imagine, like, we don't have kids, right? But I can imagine for people who are parenting or running a business together, or have a lot more balls in the air in their relationship, more regular check-ins could be helpful. But I like the idea of it being something semi-regular to just, and I noticed, even though we talk so much, I noticed that in that conversation, there were things that I realized as I was speaking. It was like, oh, and also actually this thing that I haven't thought about or said before, I'm suddenly aware that I want to share that, you know. And I think it wouldn't have come up otherwise, because it was a really specific space where a certain question was asked and I was given the space to respond.
And that's important. You were given the space, and it needs to be a safe space where any concerns, you know, worries, fears, etc., you have permission to share in safety.
Yeah, exactly.
So back to the original point of this discussion, this is an opportunity, isn't it, for a couple to have a discussion. Okay, how are your sleep patterns? How are you coping with my snoring?
Right, exactly. And to see that we don't need to do things the way that we've been told relationships need to be, right? Like, there's this idea that everything should be this particular traditional way, and we can make our own relationships, we can make our own plans and fulfill our own desires and see what we need. And sometimes what we each need in a relationship might look very different to what we thought we needed at the start, or what our friends need, or what other people in society say they need. And there's no shame in that. It's just, you know, we're all different and we can choose. I think that's what we're realizing now more and more with relationships. People aren't in relationships as much for the sense of safety, you know. Like, a lot of women now have more financial independence. Like, there's, you know, it's not like back in the old days when you couldn't have a bank account or own property or that kind of thing. And you kind of needed to be married for that sense of, you know, security in the world. That's not the case anymore in a lot of countries for a lot of people. And that does allow us to kind of relate intentionally and to design our own relationships in a way that works for us.
And isn't it refreshing when you speak to a couple who have designed their relationship in such a way that isn't considered traditional these days? When couples, you know, particularly mature couples who I'll hear will say, oh, you know, they've come together and they have separate homes and they just love the way it works. And, you know, especially, I suppose, with blended families sometimes. But so, coming back to the notion then, or actually what I'd like to talk about is some of the risks associated with sleeping together and sleeping apart in relationships. And, you know, sleeping together, there is significant risks. And I do want to touch on our own personal experiences here. Would you be comfortable sharing your sleeping arrangements, Bonnie?
Sure, yeah. So my partner and I have separate bedrooms in our home. We have a three-bedroom, well, we live in a three-bedroom house. and I have the office is one room, that's where I am now, and then behind this is my bedroom, and across the hall is his bedroom. So we have separate bedrooms, but we do choose to sleep together some of the time. We like it for the comfort or the coziness, but we never sleep very well usually when we do that. I would say at the moment we sleep together one or two nights a week.
Okay.
Mostly we sleep separately.
Thank you for sharing. So Bonnie, when you, so you mentioned that you sleep together one or two nights a week. Making that decision, is that is the night that you choose a little bit reliant on what you have to do the next day?
Yes, very much, because we know that we won't sleep as well. My partner does counselling, so he does one night a week, he does a night shift, and, you know, so that's tonight. Monday does a night shift, and then that goes into, that means that we definitely won't sleep together that night. Then Tuesday night, he needs some space on his own because he's just done a lot of back-to-back work. And, yeah, it's just really about what we have going on. If I know I have to be up early for something, or I have a big day, or I'm feeling stressed, I'll always choose to sleep alone. We like to sleep together more just for the closeness and the intimacy, and they're just like, it's cozy and it's nice to cuddle and it's nice to wake up together. And, you know, there's some parts of that that I really enjoy, but what I notice is that almost every time we sleep together, at least one of us doesn't sleep that well. Occasionally we'll have a night where it's just like, oh, I surprisingly slept well next to you. And maybe that's when we're both really physically tired or something. But a lot of the time it's just, yeah.
And so when you first came together in a relationship, was it that way from the start? Do you mind me asking? Or was this, had you tried sleeping together for a while and it wasn't so effective for you?
So initially, we have an interesting relationship in that we were together for a period, and then we broke up for over a year, and then we got back together again. So it's been like a little bit of back and forth. So we only moved in together about a year ago. And before that, he would just come and be at my place a few nights a week, and we would always sleep together. And I felt like that worked better to sleep together a few nights a week, because I had a chance to miss him. He was away somewhere else at his place, and then he would come to my place, and I would just want to have that closeness while he was there. But then after we moved in together, like, we intentionally really thought, yeah, we want to have separate rooms. And we initially, he moved into the place that I was renting previously and had a separate room in his own space and really enjoyed that. Yeah. And then when we were looking for another place, we were really looking for something that had multiple bedrooms where we would both have that comfort. And part of it is, you know, so that he also just has his own space with his stuff. And part of it's practical, right? Like, I can't imagine, maybe this is insane, but I can't imagine sharing a closet with a partner. I don't have a walk-in closet. I just have like a big wall of cupboards, but I'm like, that's my space. I don't want someone else's stuff in there. You know, I'm like, you've got your room with your stuff. You can do it how you want. You can make a mess. You can, you know, that's like your zone. And this is my zone with my stuff. Like, yeah.
I need to share part of my own story there, actually, because that's a really good point. So to listeners, Andrew and I sleep apart. My story is that, as many people who listening will know, Andrew and I came together very quickly, and I was and had been single for quite some time. So I met him at 49. I had only lived with one man in my life for about 3 months. I'd been in relationships that were only between 11 months and a year and a half. But a lot of time on my own. So I was very accustomed to being in my own space. And so when I moved in with Andrew for a year in accommodation that he was living in a different part of Melbourne, that came with its own set of challenges. It was terribly cost effective, which was great. It was beautiful, like a really quirky, interesting old building, but it had significant noise issues with tenants upstairs because of broken floorboards and other things. But we came together, and as I'll be honest, I came to this relationship terribly excited, thinking, wonderful, here I am about to share a bed with somebody, you know, excited about the intimacy, that sense of comfort, as you've mentioned, and it's what you do. I'm pretty sure it came at the relationship, well, this is what you do. And what happened for me over the course of that year is I was getting sicker and sicker and sicker. And we're also in lockdown. So I met this guy. Within a couple of weeks, we were engaged. We moved in together during lockdown. And then suddenly we're in each other's space, which was really confronting for me, having had so much space, but also the sleeplessness that, and then the anxiety that came about as a result of that. But I was never getting a full night's sleep. And as someone who's come from a history of chronic fatigue and adrenal fatigue, that is the anxiety that invokes is, it can be pretty serious, and the cracks in the health that come about as a result of that. And so what happened as the year progressed is we decided that it would be healthier for me to live in a separate bedroom, but that's sort of by the by. And then we bought a house. We are very fortunate in that we could afford to buy a 3-bedroom home. I am working in the 3rd bedroom. We then came here and the master bedroom is mine. And Andrew, who doesn't really, I think that I have become so used to having a beautiful Amy space that has all my bits and pieces and, you know, the colours and everything that feel that it's, my bedroom is very much my sanctuary. I love bed more than anything. Andrew's not really that, doesn't care that much about bedroom being his sanctuary. So he was kind of happy for me to have that room. And further to your discussion around your own wardrobe, we do have a walk-in wardrobe, but my end's there, his end's there, that's okay. But what I am loving about having my own bedroom is it's my space. Not to say that he can't come into it, but there's something lovely about being a 50-year-old woman having finally come together with someone that she loves, but still feeling like there's just this space. It's not, there's not necessarily any compromise needed here. This just, I walk in here and I breathe and it's like, ah, oh, this is me. I've just still got this little piece of me. Yeah, so I hear you on the wardrobe bit, and one of my friends was saying recently that she wished that she did have another bedroom or space in the room in the house where she too could just, it could just be for her. And there's something that feels really lovely about that.
Right. Yeah, totally. And yeah, that is important to mention that some people, for various reasons, for financial reasons, or just because of their setup or because of the number of kids that they have and the space they have, there's not always an option to sleep separately. And, but it's something that, you know, it's just a helpful conversation to have around sleep generally. What I've heard, and I have this theory, I've never had a king size bed. I've only ever had queen size beds. But I believe that if I had a king size bed, I would be able to sleep better with someone else in the bed. And I'm curious to try that, but I just haven't upgraded yet because I have a great bed frame and a great mattress.
Expensive.
And I've all my favorite like linen duna covers and everything. And I'm like, hang on a second, if I need a new bed and bed head and mattress and protector and duvets and duvet covers and sheets and everything, like I'm not ready to kind of invest that like thousands of dollars right yet, but I do think the size of the bed can make a difference. And something else that I've also heard that some people do is they have 2 single beds inside a king size base or a custom made base, so that they still have separate mattresses, so that when one person rolls over, the other one isn't kind of, you know, also rolling. And then it also depends on the quality of your mattress. So I think there are lots of different ways to calibrate your sleep experience, whether you choose to sleep in the same room or not. And of course, I remember growing up, actually, my grandparents had separate single beds.
Which is very common. And often they would put, they would be apart or sometimes push together, as you've mentioned. And actually watching a lot of European Scandinoir type thrillers that we do, we often notice that those a lot of European couples sleep with 2 single doonas, have their own doonas on the queen bed or the king bed.
Yeah.
Which also makes a bit of sense. But and that's all well and good. So I actually have a partner disturbance mattress or whatever it's called, a lack of disturbance. But Andrew is a fidgeter, a significant fidgeter. He cycles a lot and he gets cramps and things like that. So he'll fidget during the night. But that's the least of the concerns for me. He snores. And we have done, or he has done, everything he can to get to the bottom of this issue. He has sleep apnea, has even had surgery, adenoids, polyps, deviated septum, everything dealt with. It made no difference.
even wears a splint. We've literally tried everything. And so, and he can't sleep with a CPAP machine. And I wouldn't even be able to sleep next to him with a CPAP machine because they're noisy. And I'm a light sleeper, as a lot of women are. And so at the end of the day, there is no choice. Now, one of the complex issues that comes about as a result of this is that we, yes, have a three-bedroom home. Andrew, a lot of people may not know, has two kids, 20 and 21. The complex issue there is not having an available room for a family member to come and stay. So that's a whole other conversation, but something that is really tricky for us. But the priority for both of us in our situation, without question, is sleep. And Andrew has said to me, Ames, I can assure you that if you kept me awake at night, I'd probably murder you. We would not be in this relationship. And I would not be able to be in this relationship if we shared a bed. Because sleeplessness, you know, when we'll come on to the risks associated with not sleeping together and the lack of intimacy that can come about. But part of the issue is, you know, the health impacts, the mental health, the knock on for mental health for me in my business. I could not see a client when I'm sleep deprived. I couldn't have this conversation if I'm sleep deprived. I'd start making poor food choices. Our relationship would just fall apart ultimately. It's just not worth it.
Right. And it's a different thing when you're not in your 20s anymore.
That's right.
You see people in their 20s, like people when they have kids, right? Like they go through that process of sleep deprivation, and our bodies are designed to manage that when we are young. But, you know, I'm pushing 40. That's not like if I have a bad night's sleep, I feel like absolute trash the next day. It's really hard to focus. I already have brain fog at the best of times. You know, I have like my kind of ongoing chronic health stuff that I've been navigating that goes up and down, and sleep is just so important. And we know now, like you said, there's a whole science of sleep and how important it is to wind down well and to just get a good restful sleep. And we know that sleep is when our bodies repair and restore themselves. And, you know, it's not just our energy levels and what happens the next day, but just our bodies, like longevity and capacity to just, you know, nervous system regulation and so many other things as well.
Yeah, that's right. So it sort of, it becomes for many people, there is no choice. It's just no choice. It's health, you know, poor health or poor relationship but actually there is a choice, because there are, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you today was how can, you know, the issue, you know, sleeping apart can impact without question the intimacy. I think for Andrew and I, we do speak about this a bit. And to be honest, both of us have been very busy for a few months, and we probably need to get back into our relationship agreement discussions as well. Because what can happen is it can start to feel a little bit like your two flatmates living together. You know, we have this beautiful evening routine of a lovely dinner together, and we put our PJs on and we make a pot of herbal tea and we line the couch, each separate couch, because he's a fidgeter. So we're not lying on a couch together. There's not intimacy on the couch. We watch a show and then we go to bed, and it's a, you know, we go and clean our teeth together in the same ensuite. That's a rule that we have to share the same ensuite, not the guest. He doesn't use the other bathroom, so that we have that coming together. And then whoever gets into bed first, the other person has to go and come and kiss them goodnight. Right. And there's an absolute rule there. You cannot go to bed without coming in and tucking the other person in, which is really lovely. But when you're busy, you know, that happens. And fair enough, you get up in the morning, it's like, morning, hi. And it's easy when you're busy to push aside making time for more intimacy. And that is something that I know we need to be better at. But also with this, and I think this is really worth saying, I think it's really important if you decide as a couple, for instance, if someone is a fidgeter or if they snore, I think it's very important that there is no blame, that the other person is not told to leave because you're a snorer, because you're so annoying. It's not about passing blame, because that person can't help it. But also it's really important that they don't feel abandoned. That it's sort of, and they're not pushed off to the crap room, or they're just pushed out. I think that's really key. And not having them feeling like they're being banished is important and healthy. But how do you suggest, how would you suggest, and I will be honest, I'm not going to entertain the idea of having a night or two together, because it would have to be a Friday or a Saturday night, and there goes my Saturday or Sunday feeling like a normal human being. Mm. What sorts of things would you suggest couples do to improve the intimacy?
Well, it's interesting because for a lot of people, we get quite used to intimacy being an evening thing. And a lot of people I know, they fall into bed together really late. They're exhausted. They've maybe had a massive day at work, or there's been a lot going on with parenting, or they've just got the kids down, or, you know, they just feel completely flat. And of course, that is not the greatest recipe for deeper intimacy, right? Just falling into bed together, sleeping in the same bed doesn't mean that you're likely to have better sex or even good sex. Like that, it doesn't necessarily have a bearing on that, because it's a lot to do with how you take care of yourself. And are you prioritizing intimacy or connection in the relationship? And that can look like different things, because some people really love to feel like you've woken up, you have some more energy, maybe you're up a bit early, just feels like, you know, I feel like I could kind of go into the partner, whether that needs to be specifically sex or not, right? It could be just cuddling or intimacy or like a little pash, or, you know, just having some kind of closeness. Some people swear by like early afternoon sex. That's totally a thing. They're like, after lunch, but like you're not totally full and there's a little lull in your day and maybe you work from home, and it's like, oh, that's a nice time to be intimate together. So I think it's really about looking at your relationship and your time and your lifestyle. What would make sense for both of us? When is the best time window to be intimate? And maybe it is the evening. And then if it's the evening, it's finding a way to allow that to happen sometimes while still being able to get that good quality sleep. I know for my partner and I, we are more likely to be intimate if in the morning, if we've slept in the same bed. But what we also do a lot of the time is we go to bed together, and we'll have that cuddling and closeness and maybe more sexual intimacy. And then we'll go to our separate beds. And because the thing that I found is when we together, and maybe this is, it's not for everyone, but we get excited, we talk a lot, and we like, yeah, and then this and this and this, and then we get too excited, and then it's really hard to sleep. So we found that's also a reason why it can be good to, you know, have the nice intimate connected time and then go to our separate bedrooms. But also quite a few nights a week, we just have our separate time in the evening. You know, we'll have dinner together, we might watch something or chat about something, and then we'll go, cool, I'm going to go and have my own time and disappear into our own rooms and close the door and do whatever we want. And that can be quite nice, because for me, it can give me a chance to miss him, you know, to feel like, he's over there doing his thing. And then in the morning, he'll come in for a cuddle and it's like, it's you again, instead of feeling like rolling over and being like, oh, you were annoying me all night. Like you're right next to me. I feel agitated. I didn't sleep very well because of that. You know, it's giving you a chance to miss them as well.
That's right. And that is the risk, isn't it? That's part of it, is that irritability and the resentment that can build and the constant frustration of, you know, just not being able to get a good night's sleep. It's just not worth it, is it? But, you know, I think communication is, as you've said, is just so absolutely key, isn't it, to making this an effective arrangement, if that's what you'd call it. But something else actually that has come up for me during this discussion, and of course, as we've said, it's a privileged scenario to be able to sleep in a separate bedroom or even have two mattresses. But one other thing that Andrew and I are facing that is massively inconvenient is, because we can't sleep together, when we're invited to people's homes, we do or don't go according to whether they have two spare bedrooms or he has a work van. He would put a mattress in the back of that. That is really inconvenient for people. But also the idea of travel. And, you know, a few weeks ago, we went to a music festival. We stayed in a cheap little motel. We tried to sleep together, and 4 o'clock in the morning after 7 attempts of rolling him over, I just couldn't do it anymore, and so he went out to his van. But, you know, imagine when you start travelling internationally, the expense of this, like it's just not ideal.
And yeah, unless you're somewhere like India.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And some people will probably be saying, well, get better earplugs. Let me tell you, I have the most fantastic earplugs, and I can't remember what they're called, but they're, for those listening, they are the I'll put them on the article for this podcast, that they're malleable. They're like Play-Doh. But Andrew snores loudly. And the problem, you can't even wear what are they called? Noise cancelling headphones, because that means you then can't move your head. But there's a lot of complexity that comes up when you're not sleeping together.
Right. Right. And that's really interesting, because what you're talking about is like it's something that is just really, really hard for various reasons, including the fact that there's a snoring situation, right? So that's very different to my situation with my partner. He's actually a very quiet sleeper, but I am a wriggler.
And you're a wriggler.
Yeah, I'm a wriggler. And I don't actually disturb him much. And he doesn't disturb me much, but I disturb myself from being anxious about disturbing him.
Yeah,
so I can be there, like if I'm not sleeping that well and I'm kind of rolling, flopping over from side to side, and then just being like, oh no, I must be annoying him. Oh my God, I'm probably, this is so frustrating because I want to be sleeping and maybe I'm keeping him awake. And occasionally I am, but most of the time it's me keeping myself awake with my own kind of anxious thoughts about that situation and about like whether I'm being annoying or if I've moved too much, you know. So it's like almost like a paranoia that comes up.
Yeah.
And I feel like I can't just, when he's there, I can't just fully like starfish or move around in the way that I want to. That feels most natural for me if I'm having trouble sleeping. Mostly I'm actually quite a good sleeper, but it has become a little more challenging lately. And part of it's also just getting off screens early enough and the wind down routine and the herbal tea and, you know, all of that. But I noticed that, yeah, we can still sleep in the same bed if we're away somewhere or at a friend's house or something, because it's not the biggest obstacle, because it's not a noise thing. But I have absolutely had partners who snored, and I found it really challenging. So it's a whole different thing.
And what you've just mentioned there, like, you know, the herbal tea and having a good sleep routine, I think that as a couple, if you are sharing the same room, if it were me, I would have some pretty strict rules around what is and isn't appropriate in the bedroom. If you have different sleep routines, if one of you needs to be asleep at 9:30 and the other needs to be asleep at 11, then it's probably not appropriate that you have devices on with, you know, blue light. Blue light. There should be devices out of the room, those sorts of things. There needs to be, I think there has to be a real appreciation for what both of you need.
Right,
exactly.
And that's totally, and that's what's interesting in my relationship, because we'll just, you know, we're pretty good with devices and things, but then we'll just, like, if we have sex, for example, we can be like quite buzzing afterwards, you know. There can be this like a lot of energy and it's exciting, and then you get into a conversation and you're chatting about this thing and suddenly an hour has passed and it's like, no, this is not a midnight conversation. Like,
yeah,
if we're talking at midnight, we've got to be like whispering and it's really gentle and low key, and you know, that's not always what happens. So it's just having those conversations and saying like, hey, we've been doing this, but this isn't actually working for us. And what little shifts can we make? And maybe that's just, you know, creating a better sleep environment in the room that you both share, or maybe it's finding some way to sleep separately some of the time, or for some people, most or all of the time.
Yeah. So the moral of the story then is to communicate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Isn't it? Your needs, what you need in order to sleep more comfortably, how you feel that a lack of sleep is impacting the relationship, but actually just to have these open discussions and find comfort in having them. What about, and we'll need to finish up in a tick, but what about, it must be difficult for, if you've got a couple, and because people will come with different levels of judgment and stigma to this, I imagine it would be very tricky for one member who needs to, say, for instance, someone like me who desperately needs sleep and is a light sleeper, to have this conversation with a partner who believes wholeheartedly that a relationship is doomed if you are not sharing the same bed. These are the sorts of conversations that I suppose are worth having well before you end up buying a house together like Andrew and I, as quickly as we did. But they are really important conversations to have, aren't they?
Definitely. Yeah. And looking at a lot of that stigma and those, because that comes up in so many areas of relationship, you know, that the relationship, you need to live together, or you need to sleep in the same bed, or you need to have sex X amount of times per week. And, you know, people get really hung up with sex on the quantity versus the quality. Everyone's always like, oh, but we, you know, I really want to be having sex 3 to 4 times a week and then I'd be happy. And it's so interesting because it's like doing something a certain number of times doesn't actually fulfill you, right? What's going to be fulfilling is having high quality intimacy when you do have it. And what we know, there's a lot of studies around this, like when we focus on quality over quantity, so much improves in that area of life anyway. But we can get fixated on these ideas of what we think it's meant to look like. And I find it a really helpful reminder that we can design our relationships from the beginning, and we can continually check in and redesign and, you know, shift things as we need or as it feels important.
Yeah, beautiful. I do recall a psychologist saying to me once that, and this is sort of touching on this the expectations we have around what you should or should not have in a relationship, but she was saying to me around this notion of intimacy that really what you need to aspire to is to have at least one moment of intimacy in a day, which could simply be a beautiful hug when you see someone in the morning, or a sharing of a cup of tea, or just one moment. It can just be one moment. And as long as there is that sense of just coming together for that one moment of intimacy, that can often be enough.
Feeling actually present together.
That's right. Coming out, yeah. Mm. Yeah. All right, on that note.
Because a lot of people just rush through life, never fully being there, right?
Yeah.
So that's the presence and curiosity. Presence and curiosity is such important qualities to cultivate in relationship.
Mm.
They make a big difference.
Yeah, that's another podcast discussion, I think. Mm-hmm. The curiosity and the impact of that. Bonnie, thank you so much for a really good conversation. And I'm really hoping that this will provoke some conversations in relationships that perhaps need to happen.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I've never spoken about this publicly before, so it was.
Oh, haven't you?
No.
Right. Well, I think these discussions are really healthy and positive discussions to have. But thank you so much for your time. We'll make sure that you can access Bonnie and all of her work via the show notes on the website.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Bonnie. This was episode 42 of Woman, Conversations for the Curious. You can find Bonnie on Instagram at bonniebliss.co or on her website, bonniebliss.co. You'll find all of her links and all of today's show notes over at theholisticingredient.com/42. Until next time, stay curious.